All right. Okay, we have everybody in the room. So welcome everybody to Tuesday's speaker series. We have two folks lined up in sort of the retail business space for you today. Yesterday was all about sustainability. And here comes Monique also. So we have Carlos Vargas from Vargas Insurance speaking to you today. So Carlos, why don't you go ahead and give us a brief introduction on who you are and where you are in the community and stuff.
Sure. I've been in the insurance space, independent insurance agency for 40 years. Started off working for a direct writer 25 years ago. Decided to open up my own shop. Today, there's probably 17 people at the agency. We're all about community. We're all about, you know, I'm a believer in giver's gain. That I don't know if you've ever heard of the BNI mentality, that you have to give before you expect to receive. I'm a partner at the agency. There's four owners, 12, 13 employees, and we're weathering the COVID.
Yeah, talk to us maybe a little bit about that. Like, what was the immediate, so quarantine hits, what are some of those immediate issues that in your business that you face with some of your clients and in the space?
Yeah, it's funny. The first thing that hit us was like, this is never going to happen. Oh God, it happened. So now we need to figure out how to work. And we had been moving, you know, we're, most of our staff is spread between two offices. And we had been, you know, buying technology because winter's going to come and snowstorms come and people have fires and they have auto accidents. So we need to kind of not be, hey, we're closed because of the snowstorm. We need to be there because that's when you reach out to your insurance agent is when you have a problem. So we've been buying technology and this just kind of, the COVID just made us like, hey, we need to spend the money on the technology that we budgeted for this year. So a majority of our staff is working from home. Three people like to come into the office. They're the block and tackle. They're the ones that make sure the paper gets, you know, scanned, the letters get opened, things get sent to the carriers. But we continue to be in business, but we're not writing much business because people aren't buying cars or they're uncertain about buying a home or listing their home. And we're primarily a personal lines agency. So there's really two types of insurance agents and there's really two types of insurance independent agents. So as an independent agent, we represent many companies. If I was a direct writer, I would represent Liberty or Metropolitan or Amica. I would just be representing that company's products. But as an independent agent, when you come to an independent agent, we represent you to many companies. So when you call us looking for a quote, we'll give you 11 different quotes because we represent 11 different companies. Where when you work for like Amica and Liberty, great companies, I work for them as well, but they only have one price. So there's not much flexibility there on pricing. But also, so we're independents, but we're primarily personal lines agents, which means that we deal with auto and home and life and small business. And then there's the other side of the independents that deal in the business world. So I was talking to a friend of mine in California, 40%, actually 80% of his business is business, restaurant and the hospitality business. He's already lost 40% of his income because people aren't paying premiums. They're not in business. They can barely pay for their employee salaries. So insurance is the first thing that they jettison. So that's what we're saying.
Yeah, that's obviously been difficult. Obviously, the inability to work has been a huge issue, especially in the restaurant space as well. But the are you seeing any creative? So maybe for you and your business, and maybe any of your clients, what are some creative ways that you've adapted to this situation that maybe have allowed you to excel or address them?
Yeah, no, it's funny. You know, we're a typical brick and mortar insurance agency where people come in. You don't sit at a counter. We have, you know, our sales reps have their own rooms. So you sit across from Carlos or Anna or Jim or Billy. And then you kind of, you know, they go back and forth. You answer the questions. We shop around for the best rate. We flip the computer around and you say, hey, Metropolitan is, Travelers is this, Arbella is this. So it's actually allowed us to use videos in presentations. So we're seeing, so we've always done, you know, quotes over email, but now we're adding a video there as well. So either you can see me on the lower left-hand side or you don't see me at all, but I'm able to describe to you the deductibles, the coverages, the endorsements. And we're finding that the new business that is coming in the door, we're closing at a much higher level because now there's a video. Now they're not trying to look at this piece of paper and say, what does this mean? I'm saying, hey, so with an arrow, this is the deductible. What this means is this is, so we're able to adapt. You know, we've been forced to use video as part of our presentations because we can't see clients face to face. So our closing ratio has become better.
Interesting. It's been an interesting hack that the adaptation has actually helped accelerate the business in a way, which is
The number of presentations is down by 2/3, but we're closing more of that 1/3 that we're still able to quote.
Gotcha. Okay. So in the bio that we sent out beforehand, it noted that you were at one time the president of merchants, which sounds very regal.
All right. It's, you know, somebody, I didn't show up for that meeting and I said, hey, we're going to let that guy, Carlos isn't here this time. So just basically the president of the merchants down here, there's probably 60 business owners. A big chunk of them are, you know, restaurants and coffee shops and little stores and stuff. So just trying to kind of have, by being in a group, we have better impact with the city when we want you know, lights looked at or a street turned into a one-way, or like right now we're talking to the city about closing an end of the avenue 3 or 4 days a week for the restaurants to spill out into that area. So the merchants are talking with the civic people, the folks, and I live where my business is. So I'm on the civic board and the merchants board. So we're having conversations. The civic board carries a lot of weight and the merchants do too, because there's 60 of us that are involved. We get, you know, we get involved when somebody's running for a city councilor or a Suffolk this or the state rep and stuff. So by having that group together, we tend to have a little bit more people listen to us a little bit more versus just Carlos, the insurance guy, calling looking to have light changed. You know, it's the merchants calling.
For sure. That's interesting. The blocking off the avenue for the restaurants there. What maybe that would be cool to go into. Maybe what are some of the creative ways that, you know, the restaurants and the retailers that you help have adapted to this that you're aware of? And then I would almost want to flip it and be like, what are some maybe left field or kind of out there ideas that people were interested in potentially implementing?
Yeah, it's funny. One of the restaurants, so there's probably, you know, maybe 6 or 8 of them within a quarter of a mile of my home in my office. One of them just over on the other side the Neponset, about 4 weeks or so ago, they took over some of their outdoor parking space. They're going to extend their outdoor dining because inside, you know, they, you know, you can't go inside until version 3 of our social isolation, I think. So they started, they put up some planters, some trees, some lights, which looked really great. I'm thinking, wow, this is great. You guys are thinking in advance. And lo and behold, as of Monday, they're, you know, they have 12 or 15 tables and they started opening up for lunch, which they never did before. They also have a pizza oven and they make amazing pizza, wood-fired oven. So now they become a bakery as well. So it's, right, steel and rye restaurant and bakery. And the bread is amazing because the flour is ground locally here. And it's ground today. It's turned into bread tomorrow. And it's really good. So they figured out, our friends over at Pat's Pizza you know, he had a decent inside sitting, which you can't, and he doesn't have outside sitting. So what he did was he created, you know, pizza kits. So take, you know, so here's the dough, here's the sauce. Did you want, you know, the pepperoni version, the mushroom version? And so folks are, you know, having unique experiments at home making his Pat's pizza. So he's thinking outside the box as well.
That's fantastic. And also a little bit of torture this yeah. close to lunchtime.
Right. Yeah, sorry.
No worries. No, that was awesome. That's really awesome to hear too. I think the, especially in a restaurant there, in pizza in general, it tends to be one of those very sort of family pizza night on Fridays kind of thing. So it's cool. They've taken that extra level of engagement in their approach to it and almost used that as a selling point as part of it. Beyond maybe just restaurants and sort of food service, are you seeing anything maybe in the retail space or from other sort of business owners of yourselves that have found creative ways to adapt to the situation?
So it's funny, in the insurance space, we're like all of a sudden talking about technology, which we never did before. I mean, technology is, we need to replace that person's, you know, desktop computer. Now it's, you know, how do we connect? How do we have meetings? How do we have our, you know, we have a daily, you know, sales meeting. How do we connect versus getting everybody into a little room and we're all on top of each other? We can't do that anymore. Even when we go back, to the office space, I think technology is, you know, wiping away the old days of just paper, right? It's, you know, folks are adapting to Zoom, they're adapting to Skype meetings. You know, Cisco has become, I never knew who Cisco was other than I thought Cisco was the people who deliver like food to restaurants. And Cisco has this, is the on, they're the technology people. They figured out how to not have your system hacked. You know, when your staff are online, that's who our IT people are recommending. Instead of using Zoom or Skype, we should consider buying a Cisco subscription. So a lot of things that weren't like mergers and acquisitions, which were hot up until this year, and then things started to die down. So an awful lot of my old independent insurance agency friends are saying, I'm leaving. It's time to go. I don't want to do this again. I don't even want to open up my shop anymore. Which you know, which leaves opportunities for people like us who are like, we'll get over this. I mean, let's use this as an opportunity to grow and learn how we can do business. So that's one of the opportunities that we're seeing is we're adapting to the technology world. And we're also now looking at buying other agencies, which we really never did before. But now the opportunities are there, you know?
Wow, interesting. I kind of got away from my line of questioning there a little bit, but my fault. When we were discussing your role as the president of merchants, and I would love for you to, if you could like take us into the room there of as a representative for the businesses and you're in the room with city councilors or the council as they're thinking about it, what is that dynamic like? Like how receptive are government officials to plans like that? And then how much pushback is there is and maybe where is their tension and where is their creativity and collaboration?
So they're not receptive to change. And so change doesn't happen very quick. And the conversations that I've had over the past week with the civic president, we should have started this when COVID started, but nobody knew that we'd be this long into this and this is how we'd be coming out of it. So we actually, most businesses don't move very quick. Our government moves even slower, you know, unless something, you know, goes up the food chain real quick. He's having conversations with one group of people. I'm having conversations with another group of people. And, you know, we're hoping to get them together in the next week or so that we can say, hey, you know, why not move this up the food chain quicker because November is going to be here and we can't go outside in November, which is what somebody's already said. Hey, we'll be looking at October. I'm like, why bother? October, it's cold. This is New England. It's not South Carolina or Georgia where you can eat out 12 months. So I think that from government, it just doesn't move quick. So even being in a room with a whole bunch of other merchants and civic leaders, just having been an elected official at one time and spent 5 years getting something done, nothing happened. So it's so hard to get people to understand because everybody comes with their own agenda. But, you know, I said this a long time ago, you know, many folks show up to a meeting in silos. And I think I got this from Robert Reich. We're all in silos. Nobody's willing to bend, you know, I wanted ABC and you want CDE and we're never going to get in here. So I think as business leaders, as elected officials, as just civic-minded people, we all need to kind of get into these spaces and have our silos merge a little bit, you know? Say, yeah, that makes sense. Maybe it's not as important to me, but it is to you. But, you know, let's negotiate this out, which doesn't happen often, you know?
Yeah, it sounds like it might have happened with the example of the restaurant that moved out into the street and started occupying some of the outdoor space there. Is there do you have any insight into what that conversation was like in terms of how did they get something like that approved and what were some of the challenges?
He's in a budding town and all the selectmen eat at his place and he just put a bug in somebody's ear and they said, hey, you know, you have some outdoor space. You already serve liquor out there. You serve food out there. All you're looking to do is add another 75% to that space so you can get some sort of income coming in. I heard that it was just a couple of conversations. He wasn't looking to add new outdoor space. I guess it would have been a totally different. I have a friend of mine who's further up the road in the same town. And she said it won't be until next spring. She's built it out. It's almost built out. So now she's looking to do outdoor space, but the town needs to approve it. It needs to be, the folks need to show up and make sure that it conforms to all of the food regulations and stuff. So he had it easy because he had it and the selectmen eat there. She's going to have it difficult because she never had it. And the selectmen probably are there too, but it needs to go through all the phases of getting it approved.
Sure. Sure. We have a note. I guess you have a monthly column as well that you write. Can you tell us a little bit about
that? A weekly column that I write. It's called my Monday morning message. And I send it out to, maybe 7,000 or 8,000, business owners, real estate folks, mortgage. Again, it's, I give before I receive, right? So it's about sharing, you know, this is my 41st year in insurance. Some things that I've learned, I forget because I'm getting old, and some things I write down and I try to kind of get it out there because if it's working for me, it might work for you. And I do some coaching. I do some business coaching as well. So the three people that I'm coaching right now came from like, that's a wonderful idea. Could you help me put it in place? And then we get the connection going. I'm not looking to be a business coach. It's just that, you know, if I can help you grow your business, maybe when you hear, hey, where do I get an insurance policy? You think of Argus Insurance. So that Monday morning message goes out. It's my giving before I can ask to receive.
Yeah, there's the creativity, flexibility, adaptability, like sort of themes of that. How do you talk to a mortgage company or an insurance company about creativity and flexibility and adaptability in those industries that maybe we don't necessarily think about as being quote unquote innovative or creative?
And most of them aren't, I think whether it's the insurance industry, it's the mortgage industry, or it's the real estate industry, like 90% of them are experts at like, they think they know it all. They don't have an open mind. I think it comes from having an open mind. I'm always willing to learn. I'm always willing to adapt. I'm always willing to figure out another way how to get there, you know. I think David knows me as like a person. I think the glass is always half full. You know, it's never half empty. The glass, you know, there's there's always an opportunity here. And I think no matter what industry that you're in, this is an opportunity, whether you're going to scale, whether you're going to figure out how to do more with less. And that's what I share on my Monday morning message. It's how to continue to do business. And I said this the other day, if I could be selling fish, I still have to sell fish, or shoes or insurance. You have to give it to the consumer. You have to deliver it to the consumer in a way that the consumer wants to receive it. If you want it by e-signatures, if you want it via, USPS. I mean, we just need to, to sell our services, we need to adapt in the way that the consumer is willing to adapt. SOBO. I don't know if you shop online, buy offline. Folks are still going online. They're researching. I've got two millennial sons who are in the business world, and they research the living daylights out of everything. And then they go to the little market, which is great. Or they go to this store to get it. They try to find it local because if they have a problem, I know one of them is like, hey, if I have a problem, I go back and see the guy at the hardware store and he shows me how to fix it. Where if you get it from the big Amazon in the sky, you're never going to get much, handholding. So,
That's a great thing maybe to dive in a little bit on. We've seen this really interesting response, and we have another speaker this afternoon that's in the retail space as well. And a question that when I was talking to him before about this, was this idea of retail has gone through this kind of roller coaster where we all of a sudden online was a thing late 90s, there was the dot-com crash, but obviously with Amazon, everything else, the last 10, 15 years, there's been a resurgence back to online shopping. But even in the last 5 years or so, we've almost seen the shift back to the brick and mortar and sort of this, the reliance on the experience of the shopping, the understanding of the value of being able to speak to someone knowledgeable in person about it, have seen maybe businesses rebound or adapt uniquely to combating online versus the online issue?
Yeah, so in our space and in the independent insurance agency space, there's a company called Lemonade that came in and they kicked our backs. They, right before they came in, it was Geico, it was Progressive, it was The Lizard, it was Flo, and it was Mayhem, right? Because most insurance agents say, we sell a policy, the policy renews, we get paid as long as we service that client, but there's no touching, there's no reaching out and recommendations, there's no hand-holding. So Geico, Progressive, Allstate came in and they just stripped 30% of our market share. And then Lemonade came in. Lemonade is everything's online. You never talk to anybody, everything's online, and all they sell is renter's insurance. But from our vantage point or from the insurance industries, we've learned from all four of those companies on how to adapt. I need to send off a monthly email to my clients, which we had been doing for years. And we have 22,000 customers that we've insured over 40 years. And we probably have 80% of their emails. So every single month, the newsletter goes out from us talking about what's happening in the community, and not much happening now, but it is typically a video of me in there saying, hey, happy June, and we're living through this COVID thing. So I think, we're just trying to grasp and learn from all of these competitors and just how to survive and be better doing more with less. Did I answer your question? Hope I did.
Yes. Yeah. That was great. You brought up a really interesting concept here with insurance being about risk and maybe in evaluation of risk in the time of COVID and a pandemic might be a different conversation. Have you talked to any of your business clients about how they can assess risk differently given our new circumstances?
Sure. Everybody wants to buy pandemic insurance. Nobody can afford it. Right. So all of a sudden, everybody wants it. So it's funny. I had a client. We have a client who had a 25-year mortgage. His home was on a flood zone. And for 25 years, he'd come in and grudgingly write that flood check out. Never had a claim, right? Never had a claim. His mortgage gets paid off, comes in. The first thing he does, he comes in, I want to cancel this policy. Cancel it. It's done. My mortgage is paid off. It's paid off. I'm no longer, because he was required to buy flood insurance by the mortgage company because he's in the flood zone, right? About 6 or 7 months later, his basement floods out. I guess just, you know, great, we're going to cancel it for you. It was only, you know, it's maybe $800 or $900 a year, which is a lot of money, but not a lot of money. He had a flood. Now, flood insurance is exclusions and stuff, but his furnace would have been covered. So that $3,000-$5,000 claim that he, so the mechanicals of the building would have been covered. He called up and he was like, tail between the legs. He's like, I'm so sorry. You know, basement flooded. The neighbor, they did some construction next door. You know, the whole water started running different directions and it ran into his basement. So talking about risk, I mean, we talk about folks buy because they're made to buy it. So you're made to buy flood insurance when you're in a flood zone and you can't get the mortgage without getting flood insurance. You're made to buy terrorism coverage when you're purchasing a building or you're taking a loan on a business that could be a possible terrorist target. So you're made to buy it. But I can tell you the 15 or 20 of those that we do a year, they only buy terrorism coverage when the bank says, we're not giving you the money unless there's terrorism coverage on this policy. So the pandemic conversation, nobody's going to require, at least not at this point, but we are advising all of our clients to keep track of all of the information, all of their losses, because there's talk up on Capitol Hill that the insurance companies might be the gatekeepers for some sort of loss of income coverage going back to the business owners instead of just doing another $2 trillion going out to everybody. There's been talk as of late, not much of it, but at the beginning, maybe 4 or 5 weeks or so ago, there was talk up there that the insurance companies were going to be required to pay it. And then the insurance companies are like, we're going to go bankrupt. We can't be required to pay them. Okay, how about if we pay the consumers through you or the business owners through you? So there was talk of that. So the conversations that we're having, it's like, hey, document all of this stuff, because you never can have too much documentation, but you can sure as heck have not enough documentation. So document everything, file claims, conversations, so that when the day comes and maybe the feds do back the insurance companies and the insurance companies become the gatekeepers for reimbursing the business owners, maybe that's a good place to be.
So this is the first time I ever heard of pandemic insurance being a thing. Can you quickly give us an overview of, like, I get flood insurance, I get that, but like, what would pandemic insurance actually involve?
This, it would cover this. So the big tennis tournament in England, I forget what it's called, the Ryder Tournament, they have bought pandemic coverage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they're paying millions of dollars a year. They bought it for the last, I think I read 4 or 5 years, they bought pandemic coverage for the name slips me. But, and they received like $125 million because the loss of income from not being able to hold this tennis event, they lost $120, $130 million of income this year, and the pandemic policy reimburses them for the loss of business that they incurred. So that's what pandemic, similar to loss of business income. You know, if I own a restaurant and people can't come in to buy my food or they can't spend money drinking here, I've lost income. If I had a pandemic rider on my policy, then I would be reimbursed for the loss of business income that I would lose.
Got it. Okay, cool. We had someone chime in on the chat. Wimbledon, I believe is.
Wimbledon, thank you. Thank you.
And that's a good reminder. So any student, so we'll open it up to questions to the students now. So if you could toss those in the group chat or be prepared to call it out when you're ready while we're waiting for folks. Anna Katrin, did you have any
questions? Thank you, Carlos, for you know, sort of enlightening us about lots of things that I didn't know about. So pandemic insurance is definitely an interesting one, even for colleges to look into. I'm curious, because if you said Wimbledon did it a few years ago, so obviously they had been reading the news and they had been following the science and they were concerned about it. And that's exactly. That's super interesting. So I'm the faculty advisor on the Future Lab. So I'm curious if you could talk about what you think the students should be aware of and which types of skills one should maybe develop further or think about for the next few years, seeing that all of a sudden something's moved a lot faster and things that we didn't think could change at all.
Yeah.
And other things haven't moved at all, even though one would think they should. And so right. What would you recommend a group of students, you know, almost 40 of them, to look into, or you know, do you have any advice?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, the advice is I would look to disrupt whatever line of business or whatever industry that they're excited about. You know, the disruptors, you know, I read this quote the other day, I think it was from Thomas Edison, you know, I haven't failed 10,000 times, I just found 10,000 times not to be successful, or something like that. 10,000 times that this would not succeed. So I think the student should look at these, you know, like the insurance industry has been around for 200 years. You know, Chicago Fire and Casualty started back in the early 1800s or so. I mean, look at these old established lines of business and look and see how you can make them better and be a disruptor. And then as a result, you just eat market share like there's no tomorrow. I mean, Geico, Amazon, you know, I wanted to buy a kayak. I went everywhere. Amazon had the one I was looking for. I didn't want to give them my money. I'd rather buy it at REI or L.L. Bean, but they didn't have what I was looking for. So they figured out that if they had this kayak, somebody would buy it. So I think if you figure out, you know, how to get what the consumer wants into the hands of the consumer when they want it, I think you'll definitely will win out.
Thank you. I love that answer, actually, because it's a little scary to think about, you know, disrupting things and being sort of on that active front. And, you know, just to go back to us having shifted to online, I remember talking to many people at Wentworth about teaching online and that it should be done, that it's just a question of time, it will happen. And everybody kept saying, well, we can't really do this and studio is too hard and look at what happened. So all right. of a sudden it worked beautifully and, you know, with all kinds of flaws and successes. So that disruption came on its own rather than people demanding it. So maybe right. it's better to anticipate some of them and go ahead and question, you know, the old model of,
absolutely.
And we have a lot of architecture students, but we also have computer science people and mathematicians. So in their respective businesses, this advice of disrupting or questioning and how things are done, I think it's a really good one. Thank you.
And focusing on how it gets delivered to the consumer. I mean, that is right. We want it when we want it, when we want it, and how we want it. Right? Just sometimes we're not even, you know, the price comes into effect, but not all the time. If I can get it tomorrow, I'm willing to pay another whatever for it because I want it tomorrow. With that, you know, these things have made us instantly wanting what we want. And I think if you can figure out how to deliver it, you're going to succeed. You're going to win more than lose.
Thank you.
One of the things we haven't touched upon yet is kind of the path forward now. And what, so if I'm somebody, I want to open a new bike shop in your area, what should I be making any different considerations about what to do regarding opening my business, given sort of the new context of the world we live in?
Yeah, you're going to need a lot more real estate space, right? Because we can all be you can't all be compacted into a 12x12 room anymore. You know, and the folks that have reached out to me over the years about how to open up a hairdressing salon or a new coffee shop, I would say, reach out to the community, reach out to the civic leaders, reach out to the merchant leaders, and just see what they think. A friend of mine was thinking about opening up a restaurant up the street there, and three of them I know because I've lived here and I've had a business here for so have failed. And I said to her. What makes you think you're going to succeed? You know, three have failed in that spot, in that exact spot. Either the community doesn't care for the, they would rather go across the street to KFC or Mickey D's or whatever, you know. So, you know, you need to figure out how are you going to be different than the last two restaurants and one coffee shop. And she looked into it. She reached out to the community, and it wasn't worth her investment. So I think if you're opening up a business, I think you need to get everybody involved who's part of that civic and merchant group.
Thank you. Yeah, the I think understanding the needs of any community is probably a critical thing to do before opening a business in that community, especially if you're not from that area. But yeah, that's a great call out. We have questions popping into the chat here. Sure. Let's see. Here we go. First one here is, so you talked about there being a need to become more technologically savvy as the response to COVID-19. Do you think there maybe a sort of danger in that, such as an overdependence on technology coming out of it?
Yeah, I think so. I think we still need a brick and mortar. For my client base, I think I still need to have a brick and mortar. I'd love to sell the building that we own, and I like to like go virtual. And I've seen other people in my space do that, and they end up selling shortly after that because they can't maintain their service, their client. So some clients still need the hand holding. You know, today we need to figure out the plexiglass, how they come in to see somebody. You know, we can't see, most of our conference rooms are like 8x8. So you have two people in 8x8. I think that's against the law. I said to my partner, that's against the law. We can't ever be in that room with that. So we try to figure out how we can continue to service our clients. Maybe there's no more selling in those little conference rooms. There's just more servicing from a counter standpoint. But I think the reliance on technology could be detriment if you're in a community or if your client base needs to see you, and maybe even technology gets hacked, right? We're forever reading about the phishing and all these other things happening. And we're always educating our staff, like, don't click on that link. That link says, hey, this is for you. Don't click on that link. You know, that's not a good link. And then you don't know who that person was, and you know, just reply to them, what's this all about? And you never get a response. So educating our staff on, don't click on that link because it's not that good for anybody.
Yeah. Cool. We have a good follow-up question too to your comments around the importance of the client-facing aspect of your business. So Bradley says, you said you'd rather support like an L.L. Bean rather than an Amazon. Do you think local businesses or companies will come out stronger from COVID? Maybe this in the future with people wanting to support their communities?
You know, I would like to think so, because I mean, if we're just a bunch of hair salons and nail shops, there isn't much in the community. You know, for Dunkin' Donuts, nail shops and hair salons, we need to have, I'm forever talking to my merchants about how can we get a toy store here? How can we get a kitchen gadget store here? I go over to Center Street in Jamaica Plain, and that is, right, there's just so, like, everything's there. I don't have to go online. You know, maybe it's not the exact color of my chopping board, but I got a chopping board at Kitchen Gadgets the other day. Well, 3 months or so ago. I could have bought it on Amazon, but we were having an ice cream at JP Licks. We needed a new cutting board. It is the same cutting board, but different color. I ended up buying it there. I guess I paid the same. I don't really know, but I was there to support that business, you know? Hopefully I answered your question.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting thing to monitor kind of coming out of this. Is there's going to be, obviously there'll be this resurgence of people seeking to make connection, whether that's
Well, I know that the food delivery business, right? Nobody wants to go to Stop and Shop or they don't want to go out to, so I think those are going to, I think some folks will continue to have the stuff delivered, you know, have those gourmet meals delivered while you do is three steps and you chop it into a pan or something. Those things are going to succeed. But I think the small merchants that have figured out how to deliver their services, you know, in a COVID way, in the new COVID way, are going to succeed as well. You know, I know it's funny, in my little village area here, there was never any vacant spots. There's three vacant spots, you know, and COVID just started 3 months or so ago. A hairdresser went out of business. An acupuncturist went out of business. And I hear that there's another business that's going to be closing just around the corner. So these folks who are in the space, and one of them is a physical therapist, he might not be around because he can't, you know, he's not, right? Or can't be 6 feet away and tweak your back out, or can't be 6 feet away and put your eyelashes on and stuff. So it's so there's some opportunities there as well. You know, some more space for little businesses to open up, I think.
Yeah, we got one more question in the chat too. Sure. That kind of piggybacks on this as well. I mean, people are definitely seeking to have more personal, meaningful experiences, I think, especially now where we've been starved for it. How can businesses give those personal and meaningful experiences, even in the virtual space? Or maybe how have you done it, or how have you seen examples of it?
I think for me personally, it comes from a philanthropic point of the business. We've always been part of our community, whether it's we send meals up to the Kearney Hospital in the beginning of this, or whether we contribute to the Haley House and the Black Lives Matters. I mean, I think you don't necessarily have to be that engaging with a consumer if he sees that you're helping out the causes that they feel strongly about, you know? So I think from a business owner standpoint, we have to, again, give before you can expect to receive. And I think being part of the civic and in the different groups, and also contributing to causes that make an impact, you know, half the people ride the elephant, half the people ride the donkey. So you can't be that pro one or the other, but you can certainly give of your treasure, maybe some of your time when you're, you know, I saw some photos. I was flipping through my Facebook memories, and about 4 or 5 years ago, I was at a father-son's event, and I was helping out, handing out hot dogs. My kids are long grown; they're all grown up, but I can't tell you. One of my clients was there. He says, "Carlos, oh my God, where are your kids?" Now, my kids are as old as your kids; they're older. But you know, just being part of the community has a lot to do. You know, and I say this to an awful lot of my independent agents, we're free at giving of our money, but when you show up and you roll your sleeves up and you hand out the popcorn, or you help sweep the street, or you help get the, you know, people see that, people recognize that. It's not instantly business coming in. Oh, I get all kinds of business handing out a hot dog. No, people, they look at you different than they would Flo and the Lizard and Mayhem, you know, at least in my space.
Yeah, I forget where I heard the quote originally, but it was something along the lines of people measure you by your actions, not your intentions.
Yes,
and I think that's a great way to of making that call out.
I love that quote.
You show you're engaged. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know Dave is on the line with us here as well. I wanted to make sure you were heard as well, Dave. Do you have any questions?
Hey, thanks, Greg. Carlos, thanks for coming in.
Oh, my pleasure, my friend. How are you?
Good.
Another Portuguese pal.
I just wanted to comment on a few things that I think are important for the students. And you, one of my questions the students came up with, you know, being authentic. People can sense it. You know, we're animals. Having motive in business or design, they might not know exactly what your motive is, but they sense it. And being genuine and authentic really pays off in your actions and in your deeds. Yeah. And I think that's why someone like Carlos has been in business and been successful and is looked up as a leader in the community because of the authenticity. The other interesting thing is with all the different disciplines here, you're giving us sort of a recipe, you know, find the common denominators. Right. Don't be so siloed. Yes. We're all more similar than you think. And there's an added value here with being from computer science and architecture and mechanical engineer. You all have a different view, and it brings a different value and a different lens to working together. If we're going to solve the problems we have now, particularly on top of the pandemic, which would have been enough.
Right.
It's going to come from interdisciplinary thinking. And I think that you've made a career of it multiple times in your leadership roles. I mean, you're on 5 boards probably floating around.
Thank you. There's probably more
that I don't know about, but just the value of the different disciplines and just being genuine to who you are. There's a value in your uniqueness that you might not recognize at this stage of your life, but it really does make a difference. I've been a misfit my whole life, and it's working out pretty good. So I would encourage you to be you.
I think absolutely. Just be you.
There's a lot of that in here. And also in any form of business or job that you have, there's a difference between a transactional relationship and this authenticity that you have discovered in everything you do. So thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing that here.
My point, it's funny, a week doesn't go by that somebody doesn't reach out to me on social media or something like, hey, I've seen you do this. Can you help me with this? I'm having a problem over here, whether it's insurance or it's a roofer that somebody reached out to me the other day. So they look at me as like I know a lot of people, which I do know, but can you recommend somebody? I'm having a roofing problem. Absolutely. I'll recommend Jim. He did my roof when I owned a single family. So
you're the neighborhood Google. Yeah. And all of these skills that you develop and you learn from other people in different disciplines and different lens, all are additional, tools in your tool kit and often can be the one thing that gives you that edge over someone else. So fill up the toolkit everywhere that you can and just love learning.
Top of mind. Yeah, exactly.
Dave made a great point, and we brought up the interdisciplinary aspect, and at Wentworth, a huge part of the education is creating those opportunities for interdisciplinary collaboration. We do it with Accelerate. There's coursework with the Future Lab is interdisciplinary. We say that because it emulates the real world, but you kind of live that every day for the various boards and stuff that you work on. We only have 5 minutes left, but would love to get some of your insights on what are effective ways that interdisciplinary groups that you've been on have worked well together.
I think it starts with following your passions. If you're passionate about helping children, then that's where you should follow, and folks will see that you care, you're genuine about helping. If it's adopting dogs, if it's community, if it's keeping it clean, I think as David said, folks smell, they can smell things. We're people like, they're a good person, but he's here for the business. No, he's here to help because he cares about this. And at the end of the day, it's got to be business, right? Because I don't just show up and get my paycheck. I have to generate that income. So, but folks will say, hey, I've been doing this. And I'll share a quick story with you, and I won't throw any names in here. I've been talking about a local business for the longest time. He does a wonderful job. He's very, very quiet, very conservative. He doesn't really talk about the product. So I'm doing my selfie videos with him. I talk about the stuff that he does. And like after doing it for like 2 years, and I just did it because he has a good product and I enjoy going there. And he said, hey, would you mind reviewing my commercial insurance? I said, no, absolutely. You don't. Thank you. So we get this thing. And he's got an unbelievable catering business. And we have an unbelievable catering market. So we're able to take him from like $14,000 a year to like $8,000 a year, giving him the same bells and whistles and all of this other stuff. And I said to him, why are you leaving so-and-so? And he said, well, she's my cousin. And the only thing I ever get from her is a bill. She never comes into my place. She never talks about my place. I see her maybe at holiday time, if I see her at all. And you're here all the time. He said, I'm not on social media, but my wife and my kids are. And she'll say, hey, Carlos just posted. Carlos just did. He just talked. How come he's the guy doing it and you're not? Because he said, it's just not me. I just don't do that. So we gained his commercial insurance, 2 homes, like 4 cars. Maybe $18,000-$20,000 of premium just by being genuine and saying, hey, this guy's a good product. We really should support him more. And if he didn't have a good product, I wouldn't be talking about him. Do you know what I mean? So and his cousin wasn't doing anything for him. And we won the business from his cousin. Being genuine. I mean, I love food. I love to talk about food. I'm on a cooking show. So I like food. So when I talk about food, maybe some folks will say, yeah, maybe that isn't. Yeah, he's not your typical Joe looking for a cheeseburger sub. He looks like he does a little bit more than just burgers. So folks tend to kind of show up and pay attention.
That's cool. I wish we had heard about this cooking show earlier on. I could have spent the second half of the meeting talking about that. But that was awesome. I think as someone that was – my wife and I recently became homeowners 3 years ago.
And congratulations.
Thank you. We shopped insurance online and ended up going with somebody local for the very reason of the fact that like I called Nick, like I had an issue and I picked up the phone, called Nick the other day, and Nick's always there to answer my call. And there's certain things where a deal is a deal in one respect, but when you need it, like having the relationship with someone, regardless of the industry, whether it's insurance, but if it's your bike mechanic or your car mechanic, it's like the good business functions on good relationships. And I think what we'll see kind of coming out of this is people looking to establish those stronger relationships so they're able to maintain business, even if, God forbid, we're struck with another pandemic or something. Sure. But if you can establish those relationships prior to that, maybe it'll support folks moving on. Cool.
Exactly. That's
great. This was awesome. You sharing your insights. Any final words or closing thoughts for our students before we let you go?
No, I wish you guys all the best. Be a disruptor. Have an open mind. Look at these old like industries like insurance and figure out how can we make it better, right? And how do I make it successful? That's, you know, the ones that are going to eat my lunch at the end of the day are the ones that are going to deliver it better to my clients. So, and by being a disruptor, you're just making me better because I'm going to try to do the same thing that you're doing. So just bettering whatever the old mom and pop type of businesses. I mean, I would just wish them all the best. I mean, this is a great time to be a student, right? You guys are at home studying all the time and trying to figure out which way to kind of get things done. So I wish you all the best. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Carlos. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
And we'll see you at 1 o'clock. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Carlos.
Hey, nice to see you, David. Bye-bye.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you back here at 1 o'clock for Travis Underwood to continue our retail conversation. Have a great hour.
Great. See you then. Bye-bye.